Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Ganesha Worship, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Good morning, everyone. Good to be back. Set a personal record, 13 flights in 16 days. That's a lot. Fortunately, most of the grief in air travel was from London, so it would have been very awkward if they suspended carry-ons in the U.S. You know, what do you do with your computer? Can't really check it. But they didn't, so that was good. Well, we visited four temples on the trip. Sri Ganesha Temple of Utah, Hindu Temple of Colorado, Sri Ganesha Temple of Nashville, and Murugan Temple in Maryland. Oh, to keep it easy, I gave the same talk in all four places. Only Shanmugananda Swami heard it more than once. So. But I had three variations. The talk was on two questions on the minds of our youth, which of course I've shared that material here. And so I created a Ganesha version, Muruga version, and a Shiva version, because I think it was in Denver they wanted me to talk about Shiva. So the part that differs talks about Gurudeva's visions of the deities, because it's a very important part of Gurudeva's particular mystical insights into the temple, is that, you know, he had visions of the deities. So I've never heard another Swami talk about their visions of the deities. You know, have you? No. So it's definitely something quite unique to Gurudeva to talk about it and share it and bring the temple to life in that way. And so there's one for Ganesha, which just talks about what's in the Ganesha book primarily, and one for Murugan talks about the founding of Kodavol, you know, where Muruga came in the vision and hit the steps three times behind me here, and ever since we had to go into the Adinam through the side and the back door, because Shiva claimed the front door. This used to be the front door, in case anyone doesn't know. So Shiva claimed the front door, so we said, fine, we went in the side and the back. And then, of course, for talking about Shiva, I used Gurudeva's vision of Shiva on Sanmarga, since that's the experience of Shiva that has the most written about it. So I had three versions, and worked out well, and then I put an introduction on it, which had two benefits. One is it kind of led into it in a logical way and promoted our magazine, and the other is it promoted the book that's coming out at the end of the year called What is Hinduism, which combines together many of our best educational insight sections into one book, 416-page book, will be printed in January. So we started a pre-publication offer, promoted it in the various temples. And the general introduction goes through the idea that one of the challenges that Hindu families face are very challenging questions from their children about Hinduism. And it explains why, and explains that many parents don't know the answers, either because they never asked these questions of their parents, or they asked the questions of their parents and parents didn't answer. This was the culture of the family, that you didn't answer your children's questions. So consequently, many families today give the default answer, well, that's the way we've always done it. And when I say that, I get a lot of recognition because obviously they've either heard or given that answer themselves in many of these gatherings. And then I go on to explain, that's not a good enough answer. That won't satisfy any inquiring modern Hindu youth. That's the way we've always done it. So we need authoritative answers. And one of the goals of our publishing Hinduism Today is to provide authoritative answers to these important questions that Hindu children and youth are asking. And then it goes on to promote the book, What is Hinduism? So I gave the talk in four places, and it was well received. And the largest crowd was, by far in Maryland. Two of the others were on weekdays, which, of course, it's hard to draw a good crowd. But the Maryland crowd, it was it's one of their major festival days. It's a festival they call Nallur Katragama Festival, because the timing of it is in the middle of the festival, which has the same dates both at Nallur Temple in northern Sri Lanka and in Katragama in the south. They follow the same days, 21-day festival. So Murugan Temple in Maryland is fixed it on the second Saturday of August. So they had about 400 people, we think. It's hard to keep track of how many because they were coming and going inside and outside. But that was a good crowd for the talk, and definitely was well received. Lots of people came up afterwards and thanked me for the talk. And what struck me was someone in all the age groups came up. In other words, usually the teenagers don't come up. Thank you for a talk. That's rare. Well, we got quite a few of them, quite a few older teenagers. Maybe some had hit 20, 21. But Hindu youth in that age group came up, thanked me for the talk, and as well as middle-aged people and older people also came up, of course, which is customary. And so the event went very well. And one of the points I hadn't really thought about before the trip, which became apparent on the trip, was how in so many of the temples in the U.S., Gurudeva was the force which got them started. And three out of the four temples we visited, Gurudeva was very involved in their initial efforts. So, for example, in Utah Temple, Aditya Vinodara is there, and Gurudeva shipped a medium-sized Ganesha, probably that big, shipped it from India to Oakland, and Aditya went down in his pickup truck many years ago, picked it up and brought it back, and it ended up in the house of Neela Mayhem for many years, where it was Aditya did the pujas. He was the initial pujari, and it eventually culminated in the Sri Ganesha Temple of Utah, and Aditya was even took a leadership position in building it, not just theoretical, but hands-on, He's very skilled in construction, so he did lots of the work himself. And, I really hadn't cognized how much he did personally, and we encouraged him to write up his story. In fact, we thought it would be great to collect all these stories up, And the one we're most used to is Edmonton, because it's right on their website. We sent a Ganesha, and for many, many years, it was our church members took turns, meaning not every week, but for a few years, one did the puja and then another and then another. Because of the gift of the Ganesha and the pujas done by our members, eventually it manifested the temple in Edmonton. Well, that story is right on their website and is well known. This one, I had forgotten how much Aditya was involved, and certainly without his dedication, there wouldn't be a temple in Utah today. Then we went on to Denver, and we saw the Ganesha. This is a smaller one, about this big, which Gurudeva gifted originally. And Allahan reminded us that he used to come down, drive down from Vail, which is, 2 to 3 hour drive one way, every Sunday, bring the Ganesha, do a puja, and drive back with the Ganesha, because no one felt their house was pure enough to house the Ganesha. So only Vail's house. So he did that for many years, and eventually he left the Ganesha at one person's house who was ready for it, and the temple came out of that, and the temple kind of shifted into North Indian style, so the South Indian deities, including the Ganesha, are in a separate room, and the main sanctum is North Indian marble. But it was because of the Ganesha that it all came together, certainly. Went to Nashville, and Nashville, as far as I know, we didn't do anything there, but I may be wrong, you never know. But at least on the trip, nobody said anything. For the Maryland Murugan Temple, Gurudeva gifted the Ganesha to the Saravana Bhavan family, and it stayed in their home for many years, and puja was done there. And that Ganesha has ended up in the Ganesha shrine in the temple, medium-sized Ganesha, not too big. And definitely pujas that came out of that eventually resulted in the temple, and Gurudeva also went there for the Kumbhabhishekam, which they remember very clearly and really appreciate. Anyway, that's what we experienced, and as I say, I was, you know, impressed, shall we say, with how the initial efforts of these temples were encouraged by Gurudeva, both through giving the murti, and which caused the worship to start, and eventually caused the funds to come in, as well as many instances his shishya were doing the initial pujas. And so without all of that, a number of temples wouldn't exist today. So Sadaka Jyotinatha shared an interesting story. We recently, Panchula had some literature on display at, I think it was Krishna's birthday, recently at the Lamont temple. You know, there's a separate smaller Shiva temple and a larger temple to Rama. And so some of the original members came over and talked to him and were looking at the literature and reminiscing about how Gurudeva's gift of the Ganesha, which was a pretty big one, got it all started and resulted in this huge temple. And they were even thinking of inviting us, you know, and reminiscing and saying, oh, we should invite Swamis from Hawaii to come. And, you know, they played, Gurudeva played such an important role in the founding of the temple. And that's really one of the biggest temples in the U.S. And Gurudeva just sent them. I guess, was it, Deva, was it your Ganesha that got sent there to Chicago? Yeah, how big was that? It's really huge, right? Yes, so Deva Sayan, you know, at Gurudeva's request, sent them a 500-pound Ganesha from New York to Chicago. And they went down and picked it up and were totally surprised. You know, I think it came in record time, like a week or something after Gurudeva promised it. And there they were, and discussing what to do and who could do it. And Gurudeva said, start the worship. Anybody can do it. It's Ganesha Puja. You know, anybody can do Ganesha Puja. So all these doctors, who some of them were Brahmins, remembered their Sanskrit and pulled out their puja books. And that's how the Lamont Temple and Chicago got started. So the tradition is still going on. Recently, a temple in, don't tell me, Vancouver. There we go, Fiji Cultural Society in Vancouver asked for help, and so we said we'd send them a Ganesha, and they said fine. And so when we were in San Antonio not too long ago, one of the leaders of the group, Dr. Ramakrishna Rao, said he had a number of Ganeshas ready to gift to temples. And if we knew of any temples who needed one, please let him know. So we've let him know, and we'll see if he ships it off. Need to confirm it, but we thought we'd use up his first before we bring in new ones. And of course, where was it? Someplace in Texas? What city that we sent one to when you did that? Remember? Someplace in Texas, anyway, outside of Houston, right? Some suburb of Houston was recently starting a temple, and we sent them Ganesha maybe about a year ago at this point. We had one here. Big Lingam, that was on the East Coast, right? So we're still continuing Gurudeva's tradition of sending murtis when requested, and we need to reorder some, so we have a stock here once Dr. Rao starts to run low. I think he had six or something somehow. I don't know why. He ended up with six Ganeshas ready to gift the temples, but I thought we'd use them. So that's what I bring back, kind of struck with how much Gurudeva, and under his direction, Gurudeva's Shishya helped in founding so many temples in North America, and that it wouldn't be here today without that effort. And one of the reasons is there weren't any priests really then, just a couple of priests. There was a shortage of priests, and so there was a sense that no one was qualified to do a puja. And so Gurudeva was looked at as authoritative, and Gurudeva said, that's not correct. Anyone can do Ganesha puja and start the puja. So because Gurudeva said it, they started, and because they started, it eventually created a temple through worship of Ganesha. Well, nice to be back in Hawaii. We took the rainy weather that was with us when we left all throughout, and everywhere we went, they say the temperature dropped. Just before we got there, the temperature dropped. At least 10 degrees. You know, we read all the temperatures before we left, and 90, 90, 100. You know, we said, boy, it's going to be hot. And we got to where it was supposed to be 100, which was Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas. And the night before, they had a thunderstorm and heavy rain, and the temperature dropped from 100 the day before to 70. 30 degrees, it dropped. That was very considerate of the weather, Davis. That was the most dramatic drop, 30 degrees from the day before to the day we got there. So, but it, everywhere we went, it dropped at least 10 degrees from where it had been a day or two before. It started to rain in most places. So I told my rain story. It was because we had a major rain problem in, don't tell me, Nashville. You know, it was a major downpour, you know, couldn't even see on the road, and thunder and everything, you know. About an hour and a half before the event is starting, you know, on a Thursday or some day of the week, you know, which is hard to get attendance anyway. And so this huge downpour occurs, and so I definitely cut back on the attendance. But I told them my Swami Narayan story, which was, of course, the one that really impressed me when, in the month of November in Delhi, when it never rains, we got a thunderstorm. And there we were, you know, 15,000 people in these flimsy tents, and they're blowing back and forth, and the rain is coming in on the side, you know, and the Swamis are with me are starting to get wet, you know. Everybody's starting to worry, and so there I am up on stage, and I'd walked out, and, you know, 15,000 people, and I'm not used to 15,000 people. The previous group was 5,000, which they had in Houston, so they're my experience for large groups. So I said, Jai Swami Narayan, when I walked out, and 15,000 people roared back, you know, Jai Swami Narayan. You know, very powerful. So I start to talk and just get a few lines into it, and then the thunder and rain starts, you know. It's very distracting. So I said, well, you know, we tend to bring our Kauai weather with us, and one thing you can be sure about in Kauai is within a few minutes, the weather will change. So, and it stopped within a couple of minutes. So. Fortunate. Well, that was my biggest weather story, but definitely, they said, it never rains. How could it rain? And, you know, India is very predictable, you know, because it has monsoons. And so they come on certain months. They don't come. You don't get a heavy rain off season in India. But there was in November in Delhi, it was a thunderstorm. Good morning, everyone. Short talk this morning. Starts with Lord Ganesha. Appropriate as we have Ganesha Chaturthi coming up this week, 27th. And at our center in Mauritius, it's the biggest day of the year in terms of attendance there for the Panchamukha Ganapati Shrine. One of the reasons is it's a public holiday. That helps. Even if it's Tuesday or Thursday, everyone in the whole country has the day off. So I think they anticipate total number of people that will come during the day are 4,000 to 5,000 people, or something like that. Well, that's pretty good attendance. So for the morning ceremony, everyone isn't there. Lots of Mauritians go to multiple Ganesha temples and shrines that day. So for some, we're just one stop out of, say, five. But there's, I think, usually at least 3,000 people there at once for the morning Homa. So I wrote a talk to be read there and translated into Creole, which is a form of French, which is similar to the first part of this talk, but has a few differences based upon Mauritius. They're going through some challenging times there in terms of the economy and all. Lots of people are out of work because of changes in the sectors of the economy that are doing well. So it addresses a few more points than this talk does. This one is a version of the same talk, which is for our coming trip. We're leaving in a few days for Malaysia and Singapore, and one of the events in Malaysia is a morning talk after some initiations at the Koktu Malai Pillayar Temple, which means Court Hill, Ganesha Temple, and it's very popular in Malaysia. It's near the court, so everyone goes there, prays to Ganesha to win their side of the case, even the lawyers. So around 7 or 8 in the morning, you see all these fancy cars drive up with lawyers jumping out and praying to win their case for the day. And it's a very popular temple, but also very powerful. Even though it's a small deity, somehow it seems to be much more strong than the size of the murti itself would generate. So maybe it's been well taken care of or something. It's been there for a while, so it's certainly one of my favorite Ganesha temples in the world. So we look forward to going there. So this is the talk, which will get translated into Tamil there. So it's roughly about 9 or 10 minutes long. In all our lives, there are times when everything is going smoothly, and there are times when we are faced with numerous difficulties and challenges. And it is human nature in facing these difficulties in life to sometimes become negative, despondent, and discouraged. However, fortunately, Hinduism gives us many tools we can use to rise above these negative states of mind and emotion and face life's challenges in a positive, courageous, and wise way. Certainly one of the most important tools given to us is the worship of Lord Ganesha. Gurudeva explains Ganesha's abilities to help us face challenging times in this way. Among all the wonderful Hindu deities, Lord Ganesha is the closest to the material plane of consciousness, most easily contacted, and most able to assist us in our day-to-day life and concerns. In his hands, Ganesha wields a noose and a goad. With the noose, he can hold you close or hold obstacles close. Ganesha can capture and confine both blessings and obstacles. With the goad, Ganesha can strike and repel obstacles. This Lord is called the remover of obstacles, but he also places obstacles in our way, for sometimes his devotees are proceeding in the wrong direction, and his obstacles block their progress and guide them slowly back onto the straight path of Dharma. End of quote. Sometimes devotees choose to focus on Ganapati solely as the remover of obstacles, And when they pray to him for a certain result, and then find that result blocked by an obstacle, they conclude that their prayer is not being answered and become even more discouraged. However, this is not the deepest perspective. As Gurudeva explains, Ganesha is the Lord of obstacles, Vignaraja, and in this role both removes and places obstacles in the devotee's path. Obstacles may be encountered because the devotee is proceeding in the wrong direction. A simple comparison is to a mother raising a young child. To the child, I'm going to sneeze here. To the child, the mother is the Lord of obstacles. Did you get me a Kleenex from the Peter? Maybe. To the child, the mother is the Lord of obstacles. The most common way she exercises this authority is by placing an obstacle in the way of the child to prevent the child from getting hurt by a sharp object, falling downstairs, and so forth. The mother places each obstacle in the child's path to protect the child. Therefore, when we pray to Lord Ganapati for a certain result and then find that result blocked by an obstacle, a good response is to consider that we are proceeding in the wrong direction and look for alternative approaches that have a better chance at succeeding. When is a good time to worship Ganesha? Of course, his annual festivals, such as Vinayaka Chaturthi, are the best days of the year for his worship. His monthly Chaturthi days are also special days. What is an effective way to petition Lord Ganapati with our needs in life? A good method recommended by Gurudeva is to sit or stand in front of his sanctum at the temple and send your thoughts to Ganesha through the top of your head. Imagine them rising up through your head until they reach Lord Ganesha's realm. Pray in exactly the same way you would if you were writing down your prayer on a piece of paper. In other words, be very clear and organized in stating your request. Gurudeva also gives some specific advice on how to word your prayer to Ganapati. He tells us to give options. For example, in seeking help in finding employment, you might suggest three places you would be content at, indicating your first choice, second, and third. This is because if you only give one choice, it is not possible. This is because if you only give one choice, and if it is not possible in your karmic pattern, then Lord Ganesha and his devas will not be able to help manifest it in your life. Therefore, it is wise to suggest two or even more alternatives when making a request. When you are praying in this way to Lord Ganapati for help in your life, it is good to attend the temple once a week to worship him and make your petition until it is answered. It is also good to choose a temple where you feel Ganesha's presence is particularly strong. Gurudeva stressed the importance of the worship of Ganesha in the fourth belief in the Saivite creed, or Shraddha, of 12 core beliefs that he composed. Quote, Shiva's followers all believe in the Mahadeva Lord Ganesha, son of Shiva Shakti, to whom they must first supplicate before beginning any worship or task. His rule is compassionate. His law is just. Justice is his mind. Om. That's the first part. Second part's a bit daring. For Malaysia, anyway. This is the question of worshipping Sani or Saturn. As we mentioned at the beginning of this talk, in all of our lives, there are times when everything is going smoothly, and there are times when we are faced with numerous difficulties and challenges. Let me ask a question. Who or what is responsible when everything is going smoothly in our life and success comes easily? The correct answer, of course, is that we are. Whatever comes to us in life is our karma, the reactions to actions that we performed in this or a past life. If people are generous to us, it is because we have been generous to others in the past. Next question. Who or what is responsible and everything is going poorly in our life and success seems impossible to achieve? The correct answer, of course, again, is that we are. It is again our karma, the natural reactions to the actions that we have performed in this or a past life. The cause of both good times and difficult times is not outside of us. It is us. Sometimes it is said that the cause of difficulty is the planet Saturn, Sani. This is not correct. All that Sani can do is enliven the difficult karmas that we created in the past. Sani did not create the difficulties. We did. Common situation that you have probably heard goes something like this. My life is in a state of chaos. Everything is going wrong, and it all started 3 months ago when Saturn entered Taurus and my karma changed. I have been advised that if I can successfully appease Saturn through having a priest do regular Sani Puja, my problems will go away. Therefore, this has become the entire focus of my religious life at this time. If all one is doing is paying a priest to do Sani Puja, that's not enough. This kind of mail-order karma repair doesn't really work. Such karma can be mitigated through specific actions performed by the individual, which we will discuss next, but not merely by giving over such duties to others. To better understand mitigation, let's make a comparison to the judicial system. You commit armed robbery and receive a 10 to 20 year sentence. But due to good behavior in prison, you are released after only 5 years. You have mitigated your sentence, made it less severe through your good behavior. Let's now take an example of karma that is mitigated. You are destined to lose a leg in this life because you caused someone to lose his in a past life. If you are living a selfish, low-minded kind of life, the karma would come full force and you would lose your leg. However, if you are a kindly person who regularly helps others, the karma would be mitigated and you might read in the morning paper about someone losing a leg and take on the emotion of that experience as if it had happened to you. Later on when hiking, you stumble and your leg is injured, but not severely. The full force of the karma was softened or mitigated by your kind and helpful actions. Helping others, karma yoga, performing good deeds, and thus acquiring merit which registers as a new and positive karma is one way of alleviating the heaviness of some of our past karma. Worship, bhakti yoga, that is intense enough to cause us to receive the grace of the gods can change the patterns of karma dating back many past lives, clearing and clarifying conditions that were created hundreds of years ago and are but seeds now waiting to manifest in the future. The key concept here is intensity. Dropping by the temple for 15 minutes on the way home from work is unlikely to accomplish such a transformation. Pilgrimage is an excellent way to generate an intensity of worship. Over the years, Gurudeva's devotees have pilgrimaged to India, visiting major temples such as Chidambaram, Rameshwaram, and Palani Hills. Many have come back transformed. They physically look a little different, behave differently, and fit back into life in a more positive way than before. Their karma was changed by the grace of the gods because of the intensity of their worship. A vrata or vow can also generate an intensity of worship, such as fasting during the day and attending the temple on each of the 6 days of Skanda Shashti, or the 21 days of Vinayaka Vratam. Penance, prayaschitta, is a third way to mitigate karma. This is like punishing yourself now and getting it over with, instead of waiting for your karma to manifest a punishment in the future, which may come at an awkward time. A typical form of penance is to perform walking prostrations, such as around a sacred lake or mountain, up a sacred path, or around a temple. You can also do a penance that is directly related to a misdeed. Let's take the example of a father who frequently used corporal punishment to discipline his children, but now strongly feels hitting children for any reason, even discipline, is inappropriate. A penance would be to print and distribute to parents literature on alternative methods to corporal punishment. This type of penance should only be undertaken after a certain degree of remorse is shown and the urgency is felt by the devotee to rid his mind of the plaguing matter. Concluding this second and last portion of the talk, let me share a statement from Gurudeva about mitigating karma. When pre-dawn morning pujas, scriptural reading, devotionals to the Guru, and meditation are performed without fail, the deeper side of ourselves is cultivated, and that in itself softens our karmas and prolongs life. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.